This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to Cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here.
Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for what is, for many of you, your favorite segment on our weekly podcasts. So we do a variety of podcasts. So we do podcasts with guests of distinction. Not that today's co-participant is not a guest of distinction, but we also do clinical-focused podcasts on specific medical and health and nutrition issues. And we do our weekly Q&A with Layla, which is an opportunity for you to send us your questions that relate to health, medicine, nutrition, natural therapy, and we endeavor to answer your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for your questions. And how you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
For those of you unfamiliar with this podcast, perhaps you're a newbie, Layla Mutin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist, and she is also the recipient of a RD degree, registered dietitian degree, as well as a master's degree and advanced degree in the field of nutrition. So with that being said, how are you doing? Are you rested and refreshed after your 4th of July weekend?
Yes. How about you?
Okay, yeah. My big excitement was my bicycle came home from the hospital. From time to time, I managed to inflict grievous harm on my bicycle.
Oh, no.
Which is usually not on my body, although I did break a hip a few years ago. But this time, the bicycle took the brunt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always, it's a tragedy, but it's always an opportunity to upgrade, mm-hmm. as in life. You know, when something breaks down, it's like, upgrade.
You've got a newer model.
I kept the old bike, but I jazzed it up. You know, like little
Terrific.
Kids put like streamers and little flags on their bikes,
uh-huh.
and noisemakers and horns, and so the adult obsession, it costs a little more because you get like very fancy gearing,
mm-hmm.
you know, top of the line, really smooth shifting derailleurs, and lightweight
wow.
carbon wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And the bike, it just rides like a dream.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, in my mind, it's a healthy indulgence,
mm-hmm.
because I get exercise while I do it. It incentivizes
it's
me
great.
To go out and exercise. Because,
yeah.
I mean, if I bought a Porsche, you
mm-hmm.
know, just like, increase my carbon footprint.
Right, exactly. Very
so
good.
So this is an opportunity to do something more natural.
Is there a horn on your bike? Or a bell?
There is no horn on my bike.
Okay.
And in fact, the only thing I do sometimes is I go, on your left!
Very good.
As I pass somebody.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like verbal horn.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that's how it works.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Terrific. Out of the hospital.
Right.
That's good.
So, it's been a slow week on the health news front. So let's go directly to questions.
We had a question about Lisa, who was interested in bone health, and she asked about osteogenic loading and what that might be. Osteogenic loading is actually a rehabilitative medicine with the goal of improving our bone mineral density. And basically what we're doing is weight training in shorter bursts, but a lot more weight training with the use of a device. I've not seen the device, but it was made by a Dr. John Jaquish in 2007, and it's a device that helps bones and muscles absorb high-impact forces in a self-loaded environment. Osteopenic and osteoporotic subjects can reportedly use this device to load 3 times their body weight on the spine and over 9 times their body weight in lower extremities.
So what does the device actually look like?
I've not seen it.
Yeah.
I've not seen it. So it's some kind of a device where you're able to hold more weight.
Wow.
And use it for short-term, you know, for short-burst weight training. Isn't Wikipedia wonderful?
But are there are there clinics that offer this? Do you have to go to a special kind of gym or a clinic or a physical therapy facility for it, or how does that work?
Likely, it's an outpatient therapy that's typically used with ambulatory individuals that are able to do this exercise, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I imagine it would be involved with PT.
Right.
And there's a 2012 study that showed that the device improved bone density in subjects, so...
I wonder if there's
a
home model for osteogenic loading. Maybe that's a subject for us to do a little more research on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as I type in osteogenic loading.
Yeah. We also have the vibration plate.
Right.
Which is also very good.
Right, by Meridyne, which is interesting because it does, I mean, it's very low intensity pressure, but low intensity, high frequency vibration can be helpful
for bones.
Actually, are some good studies. And we got a remarkable testimonial from a person who had heard me talk about it on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that without doing anything different, she did, for a period of time, she did the vibrating platform. She bought one of them, and she did it dutifully every day for 10 minutes. Like she might have done 2 10-minute sessions a day. It's not much, you know, just stand on the thing. It's not unpleasant. And she had a remarkable improvement in her bone density, and it's pretty clear that it was that because
that's
she didn't
great.
Do anything different.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those machines retail for about $1,000 or so, right? Maybe as they become more popular.
I'm trying to get an image of what one of these things looks like. I see. Okay, it is a very big, you see on my screen here, for our listening audience, we have to describe this to you. It's a contraption, and you can, it applies pressure. You can do it in a seating position, you can do it in a standing position. It's like a big squat machine, but also it is a platform that you stand on. And it enables you to apply some direct force.
Looks like a bit of a home gym.
Yeah, like a home gym, but it probably is like, it looks like about a 10 grand plus home gym. It looks very fancy and sophisticated and maybe offered only in clinics or to wealthy individuals.
Mm.
So, or maybe as part of a physical therapy program for people who have healing bone injuries.
There we go. Oh, a great product for that, I'm reminded today, is Ostanol.
Ostanol, right.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's not just all about the calcium for bone health.
Right. Ostanol is bone morphogenic protein, or BMP, which can be helpful for osteoarthritis as well as for osteoporosis.
So as that's, well as for fracture.
Yes, and for fracture healing.
Yeah.
Specifically, when we have people with fractures, we want them to use Ostanol. Unfortunately, Ostanol was not available when I was healing my fracture. It's a relatively new innovation. That was about getting on to about 9-10 years ago that it happened. 2006.
That's right. It seems like yesterday, but then it doesn't at the same time. Anyway.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your question, Lisa. We've got a question from Jean. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, recently my husband's doctor told him to go on a low-carb diet, but didn't give him any details.
That's the problem.
I know. That's what the nutritionist is for. You're supposed to refer to a qualified nutritionist.
Yeah, but here's an improvement. Hmm. It used to be you'd go to the doctor, and the doctor would say, you're fat, go on a low-fat diet.
Right.
End of story.
Yeah.
And, you know, no.
So they go buy low-fat Snackwells, cookies.
Right. Don't eat any fat, and you won't
get
fat.
Don't eat any fat.
Well, now at least they say go on a low-carb diet.
Uh-huh.
So that much influence we've had. But then they don't give you the details. That's one of the reasons why you're here at the Hoffman Center, because, yeah, I got to say that for the first about 10 years of my practice, maybe 15 years of my practice, I did it all. It was like me sitting here, and then it was like, okay, this is how you prepare the meal. This is what you eat, and it was like, oh, you know, and it, after...
You went into your kitchen.
I literally did.
Yeah.
In my first practice, we literally had a demonstration kitchen. It was in a brownstone, and we had a delightful kitchen.
You were ahead of your time. That's what now a lot of functional medicine doctors are beginning to do.
Beginning to do.
So
but our current facility does not have a kitchen. you know, in effect, when I make recommendations, I'll say you need to be on a low-carb diet, or you need to be on a low-oxalate diet, or you need to be on It's not always the same diet. It's no one size fits all. Or you need to be on the GAPS diet or the specific carbohydrate diet or the GERD diet or the, you know, it could be any number of, with this product, 40 different permutations of diet.
Right.
You know, low uric acid diet.
Cancer diet.
Yep, cancer diets, right.
All of that, yeah. Okay, so Jean was writing. Our husband was told to go on a low-carb diet by the doctor. And while Jean was searching around the internet, she came across an article about lessening the negative impact of pasta, which can be a little bit high glycemic, by cooking it, cooling it, and then reheating it to change it to a resistant starch.
Which I inadvertently do. I rarely make pasta, but usually I make too much and then I have extra.
Uh-huh.
So I'm making, the next time I eat it, it's better for me?
Possibly. It's possibly causing less of an impact on your blood glucose.
But that's this very important concept, the resistant starch. So why don't you explain that? What? How could that possibly work?
Well, resistant starch, because the heating, the cooling, all of that changes the molecular structure of it to make the starch a little more resistant to primarily digestion.
So, let's actually state this. Starch is actually a long, long necklace of glucose molecules.
Yes.
Sugar. It's pure sugar, but the way that it is structured, it allows for each of those little glucose beads to slowly break off of the chain into your system. And depending on how it's cooked or whether it's whole wheat or whether the food is, whether the pasta is eaten with you know, when I eat sometimes pasta, I have more ground turkey or more ground beef than pasta. So that it actually may attenuate the effect of those little beadlets of glucose.
Right. You're lowering the glycemic load.
Lowering the glycemic index, that it doesn't hit my system as fast. Right.
So this resistant starch is hypothesized to cause less of an impact on blood sugar for that reason, because it's breaking down more slowly. Now, what science has revealed about this, that eating cold pasta did lead to a smaller spike in blood glucose and insulin than eating freshly cooked pasta. However, to the researcher's surprise, cooking, cooling, and then reheating the pasta had a significant effect on blood glucose. It reduced the rise in blood sugar by levels of about 50%.
Wow. Some kitchen chemistry there.
Yeah. So cooking, cooling, and reheating.
Is it properly al dente? Is it properly al dente?
Well, that's the thing. That's what we don't know, and it should be properly al dente.
Right, because just for aesthetic purposes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No self-respecting Italian gourmet would want you know, pasta that's not perfectly cooked.
So the point is here is that it's not just the cooking and the cooling and then eating it cool like we would do with resistant starch and potatoes or beans for our other patients with, say, ulcerative colitis
or Crohn's. We'll get into that in a second. I want to talk a little bit about that, too.
But it's the cooking, cooling, and then the reheating, and that's what I find fascinating. So it's possible, yes, if you have blood sugar issues, that you can prepare your pasta this way and then reheat it, and I would still want to lower the glycemic load more by adding some ground beef or ground turkey or even some Alfredo sauce if you can stand any dairy.
Right.
So that might be helpful. But You don't want to make a habit of eating this pasta either, because there might be other issues in terms of,
because it is, after all, a carbohydrate.
It's a carbohydrate.
Whether
number
it's
one.
Fast or slow, it ultimately
exactly, and especially where blood sugar issues are concerned. So, getting back to resistant starch.
Now, resistant starch. There's another implication to this. Now, I'm going to preface this by saying that we use something called the specific carbohydrate diet for many of our patients with inflammatory bowel disease. Or IBD. And now that consists of ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. And some patients with autism do better with that. And some patients with bad IBS, just irritable bowel syndrome, do better with that.
SIBO.
And some patients patients with SIBO, but also patients with diverticulitis get better with this.
Yes.
So it's a very versatile diet, but it allows no grains.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't say no carbs. It's not a no-carb diet because there's certain allowable carbs or legal carbs. Now, what I've noticed, and I've listened to people debate this, is that there may be a problem with complete restriction of all starches in, especially ulcerative colitis, maybe less so in Crohn's disease. Crohn's disease seems to respond pretty uniformly well to the specific carbohydrate diet. That's more a small intestine disorder. But in the large intestine, There's a healing substance called short-chain fatty acids, mm-hmm. right, which are
we
a variety
butyrate,
of them, but one particular one is butyrate. And butyrate is a healing fuel for regeneration of colonic cells.
Yes.
And one of the problems you get when you restrict the starch that much, a building block for the short-chain fatty acids is starch, which is acted upon bacteria to reproduce short-chain fatty acids. Hence, our introduction to
the resistant starches.
Resistant starches. So tell us what that entails.
We want more butyrate to produce in the gut of a person with ulcerative colitis, for example. And what we like to use, or what's been shown to work, is cooked potatoes. They could be white potato, they could be sweet potato, cooked and cooled, and eating it chilled, apparently, because, again, the molecular structure reorganizes to make it more resistant,
right.
And that resistant starch is conducive to producing more butyrate.
So we have this real treat for our patients with ulcerative colitis. We tell them, you can now eat cold potatoes! Yay!
And they go, wow!
Isn't that great?
Well, then I give them a few potato salad recipes and they cheer up.
Right.
The other way to get it is from white bean salad. Again,
and that's not bad. That is actually tasty.
And that, you could add a little olive oil, a little lemon juice, maybe some chopped chive or something, and again, cool.
Maybe
you want to eat it chilled.
Watercress or some...
Watercress or something,
yep.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then later on, we would introduce things like rice, but the one food that they do have in specific carbohydrate diet, which is helpful for producing butyrate, is cheese.
Oh, okay.
So there is that. Cheese, butter, particularly
cheese. But only
certain
cheeses are allowed.
Yes, only certain cheeses are allowed, correct.
Right.
So they do have some source of butyrate, but maybe not as much as we think they should have after a time. And if they're
And we can actually get in, and by analyzing the stool, we can actually measure the butyrate production.
Yeah,
so we can actually see patients moving from not enough butyrate to and not enough short-chain fatty acids to adequate production of short-chain fatty acids, which apparently has something to do with healing. In fact, for some of our patients with proctitis, which is more towards the opening, you know, the anal area or the rectal area, we give them butyrate enemas. We actually give them a shot of butyrate rectally, and that often facilitates healing.
Terrific.
So that's something worth trying. But, you know, it seems to work better if you make your own because it gets, you know, it's hard to shoot it all the way up there.
Yeah.
And by the way, taking oral butyrate doesn't seem to work as well. I mean, you can actually get butyric acid pills.
Yes.
You can
get
butyrate pills. It just doesn't seem to work as well as when you have your own production of butyrate in the colon.
Yeah. So these are what resistant starches can do for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, lower the impact of blood sugar, quite possibly, as well as build up of more endogenous butyrate.
Okay.
It's a wonderful thing.
Interesting segue from the discussion about the caloric impact of starch, or the glycemic index, glycemic impact of starch.
Thank you for your question, Gene. Best of luck with your husband.
I'm getting good questions. So what's our next question?
Our next question comes from Lawrence. He writes, my vigorous half hour of cardiovascular exercise has the same pick-me-up effect on me as my coffee. Why? Don't worry, it's totally black, sans any sweetener, real or artificial.
Well, that's interesting. And that has to do with the phenomenon that I once dubbed energy begets energy.
Yes.
And, you know, unlike a car where you run out of fuel when you drive the car, sometimes people who are de-energized become energized with exercise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And part of it has to do with circulation of the brain in particular, but it also has to do with your activation of your autonomic nervous system. You know, you've heard of fight or flight. You get a little bit of sympathetic nervous system activation when you exercise in a beneficial way.
Yes.
So that's a good way to wake up your autonomic nervous system. And conversely, when you stop exercising, you relax more deeply. So
you sleep better.
So I think one of the hallmarks of health and well-being is a suppleness of your autonomic nervous system so that, you know, it's like when you put the pedal to the metal, the car accelerates. And when you put the brake on, the car decelerates. And I think a lot of people have lost that autonomic suppleness or responsiveness, so that when they want to relax, they can't relax. They're all agitated. And when they want to do something energetic, they feel lethargic and slow down. So exercise is one of the ways to maintain that autonomic flexibility or responsiveness. And believe me, some days, I mean, I got it too, and you probably do too. You know, just think, man, I just don't really, I'm not feeling it this morning. And then you do it, and you go,
so much better.
I mean, you know, in the month of May, when the water is like 62 degrees, but it's a sunny day, and it's the first day, you know, at the beach, it's like, do you really feel like jumping in? But you feel better for it. After the initial, you know, you swim, you know, 100 yards or so, and you feel like, I can deal with this. But
and now, with regard, comparing that exercise to the coffee, obviously the jolt of caffeine from the coffee, which is also short-lived, not the same effect as exercise, I don't even think is beneficial, even though there's so many studies about coffee lately. Well, it depends on which week you're reading about the latest study on coffee, whether it's beneficial or not.
What coffee does is it works directly on the autonomic nervous system, but also helps to release ATP. So there really is something about coffee.
ATP is our energy currency.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's, but it coffee isn't definitely, in terms of like, what is the, you know, athletic ergogenic agent par excellence? You know, what helps with athletic performance? There's no question that coffee really does.
I hear a lot of personal trainers say, go take a half a cup of coffee and then start.
Yeah. I try not, because once I'm on to coffee, it's like, I'm up to the races. I, you know, I just like it starts escalating, and then I get the caffeine withdrawal, and you know, I don't want to do that.
Then you'll go have another cup of coffee.
I'll have to have it infused, you know, in, with like a pump.
Lawrence, thank you for your question. We hope that clarifies things for you. Okay. Let's see, our next question is from Bo.
Actually, good time at which to pause, because we divide these podcasts in two. What's Bo going to ask, and then we'll answer it in part two.
Yeah, Bo has a diagnosis of C. diff and is on Flagyl, but he's afraid his symptoms will come back.
Okay, great question, because C. difficile is a big problem these days, and there's some innovative approaches to C. difficile, because conventional treatments are increasingly lacking in effectiveness against this very, very devastating intestinal infection. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is part one of today's Q&A with Layla, and we'll be right back. Please, I was going to say, flip the record over to the side B.
The LB.
But in the modern era, please go to part two.
I have two turntables at home.
You have two turntables?
I do.
You're like a retro. You're a retro person. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.